Therese M. Sloan Baker is being interviewed on January the 14th, 2004, as a member of the Women's Overseas Service League San Antonio Unit. The interview is being held at the Army Residence Community in San Antonio, Texas. The interviewer is Ruth Stewart, assisted by Carol Hapgood. Terry, start out by telling us a little bit about your early days.
My early days. Well, I was born in New York City, New York, of immigrant parents. My father came from Poland, and my mother from Ukraine. Okay. I grew up in a completely ethnic background where everybody spoke Ukrainian. My parents were poor. They were uneducated, but they were hardworking people. My mother, unfortunately, had an unhappy marriage, so I did not know my father too well. My mother is the one who took care of me, and saw me through life. Okay. In my growing up days, as I said, I was living in a completely ethnic background, and it seemed that as I grew older, I decided I did not wish to live in that type of background. And I also felt that I needed security for myself, personal, financial security. So as I finished school, I decided to break away from most of the jobs that my girlfriends of similar backgrounds were doing, and that was, and there's nothing wrong with the jobs, but there were things like waitressing and things of that nature, and I didn't feel that that was my type of thing anyway. So I went to a business school and learned how to be a typist and a stenographer. I did not finish my course there because then they put me through accounting, and I just don't like anything to do with accounting business. However, my training in stenography and typing led to some pretty good jobs that took me out of the element I wished to become, get out of that element. I worked civil service at the on December 7th, 1941. I was working in Washington, D.C. I was the secretary to the actuarial consultant for the Social Security Administration. Okay. Then, of course, Pearl Harbor Day came, and I felt that I had to do something other than work for Social Security. So I looked around, and I found a vacancy with the United States Maritime Commission in Wilmington, California. And I applied for the job, and I was accepted, and I transferred to California, working for the U.S. Maritime Commission. I had a great job. I worked for 95 inspectors, all male, and I'll have to admit that they spoiled me quite a bit.
Nothing wrong with that.
But even though I was working for a defense industry, I still felt, with the war going on, that I had to do something else. I had to do something for the war effort. However, my bosses at that time would not release me because I was working for a defense industry. And I could have left them, but then I was afraid that I would break my security end of it if I just left, and it would probably show up on my records, and that wouldn't be a good idea. So I bided my time, and then in late 1944, when the war was sort of winding down a little bit, my boss said to me that if I still wanted to go into the service, that they would release me. So I checked around, and the Army was looking still at that point, recruiting people, and I was enlisted. I went and enlisted in latter part of 1944, and I was called to active duty in January of 45, and I was assigned to the Army Air Corps. There was not an Air Force at that time. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And my experience, by that time I had been working for almost 10 years, so I had a good deal of experience in office management, in secretarial work and all. And consequently, most of my assignments at that time were very good assignments for a person who had not had military experience before. As a matter of fact, my first assignment was at Camp Davis in Wilmington, North Carolina, which was identified as a rest and rehabilitation center. And I was assigned to the special services as a clerk typist. And the chief of that section learned of my background, so he sent him a waiver requesting that I be assigned as a stenographer skilled to 13. Well, the base commander approved all of those requests for waivers and things of that nature. At that time, I was just a private, a buck private. And when he saw my application for a waiver of skill, he decided he could use me as a secretary. So I was assigned as a secretary to the commanding general at the station. And that seemed to be the trend of things as I went along, because after that, when the Camp Davis was closed down, I was sent to Indiantown Gap, Pennsylvania, and there the chief of personnel decided I was going to be his secretary. And then when Indiantown Gap, Pennsylvania closed down, it was a separation center at the time, when that closed down for another mission, the director of personnel, they were sending all the WAC to Fort Meade, Maryland, and the director of personnel felt I should not go with all the WAC at Fort Meade, Maryland, so he found an assignment in Baltimore, Maryland, with Headquarters Second Army Recruiting. And there I had my first experience of being a boss, so to speak. And my job was in the special events section. I worked with radio personalities, with news media, and establishing special events for Second Army Recruiting. And even though War effort had wound down quite a bit. They were still recruiting people. And I came up with this idea of a special recruiting program involving the American Legion. And I called it the VALAR program, Voluntary American Legion Army Recruiting. And we enlisted over 100 men, for which I received the Army Commendation Medal, because we were the only Army recruiting district that had enlisted that many people at one time. At that time, this was by now that was 1946. My mother was living in Long Beach, California, by herself. I felt that the war was over, that I had to go back and back to civilian status and help my mom, because she was working and living alone, and I was brought up with the knowledge or
value
that the children take care of the parents. So I felt I had to go back and help my mom. So I went back into civil service. This time I found a job with the Air Force was in being by that time, at an Air Force Reserve Training Center, where I started off as a secretary to the public relations man, but then the base commander found me and he decided I had to be his personal secretary.
But you were a civilian then?
I was a civilian at the time, yeah. And while I was in that civilian status, I joined the Air Force Reserve. In 1951 and 52, there was a regulation came out that saying former top three graders, if they qualified on the ACOC exam, the Aviation Cadet Officer Cadet exam, would be given a direct appointment. So my bosses prevailed upon me to try that, apply for that program, and I did. I passed, and I was recalled to active duty as a second lieutenant. And that began my career as a commissioned officer with the Air Force. In the Air Force, I had many assignments. I was a personnel officer. I was an administrative officer. I was a commanding officer of the WAF squadrons, of two WAF squadrons. I was a training officer. I was a public relations officer. And I was a recruiter. My Air Force career, or my entire military career, really, was not a dramatic one. But I felt I was doing something that needed to be done. Otherwise, I wouldn't have had so many opportunities given to me to carry out what I wanted. And I stayed on active duty for 20 years. I had 5 years in the reserve during my civilian time. So I retired as a lieutenant colonel with 25 years of service for pay purposes. So I had my security that I had planned for all my lifetime. I couldn't have done any of this without having been in the service. I really feel that military service, for me, actually, was what got me out of my beginnings of being an immigrant daughter. And there's nothing wrong with being an immigrant's daughter, except it was not my way of life. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, is there anything else you need to know about me? When I retired, I received the Air Force Commendation Medal and the Meritorious Service Medal upon retirement. All my assignments were good assignments, although there were times when I ran into discrimination, being a woman. Okay. One of my assignments was to be the executive officer for a base commander in Bermuda. However, the colonel in charge of the base commander at the time, had never had a woman on his staff, and evidently he was not going to give me that assignment. As a matter of fact, he had me unassigned for about 2 months while he made up his mind what to do with me. He finally called me in one day and he said, I was captain at the time. He said, Captain, he said, I understand that you've had personnel background. I said, yes. He said, well, how would you like to be a personnel officer rather than the base executive officer? So I looked at him and I thought, well, for one thing, the personnel office was way on the other side of the base. And I thought, well, I think I would like to be a personnel officer because personnel is so varied. There are so many different types of duties involved that to me it sounded more interesting than just sitting at a desk and signing off on pieces of paper. So I agreed to do that. So what he did is he took the personnel officer, made him the base exec officer, and made me the personnel officer. And it really worked to my advantage, even though I was a little upset at the time. But it really worked to my advantage because I was the only woman on base, woman officer rather, a non-medic, because we did have a small hospital there. And the base used to use me for various community activities. I was a speaker. I spoke to the various organizations on Bermuda. I met many fine people in Bermudians as a personnel officer. One of my subsidiary duties was schools officers. So consequently, I became involved with the school system in Bermuda. It, as I say, it worked to my advantage. And then one day, I remember, I was at base headquarters, and the colonel, we had a visitor from TAC. We were a TAC organization. And the general was with the base commander in the hallway. And as I walked by, I just said, good morning, sirs. And the colonel, the base commander, called me back, and I thought, uh-oh, did I do something wrong? And I went back, and he said to the general who was visiting, he said, I'd like you to meet my personnel officer. It's the first time I've had a woman on staff, and now I wonder why I didn't before.
Great.
So I felt I had accomplished something mm-hmm. for women in the service.
Did he tell you originally that he did not want you as the base executive officer? Was that the title? Because you were a woman? Or
No.
You had to surmise that.
I surmised that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, why would he keep me unassigned when that spot was vacant there mm-hmm. as the base exec? But as I say, it worked to my advantage, mm-hmm. really. Mm-hmm. I didn't make a big hoo-ha about it. I know some women may have felt that that the discrimination was such that they had to fight against it. But I never did that. I found that if I just do the best I can, whatever I'm doing, that things will work out okay for me. Mm-hmm. And they did. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm very proud of my Air Force career.
Where were you overseas?
I was in Germany twice during the Army of the Occupation, and I was in Bermuda.
The occupation would be post-World War II?
Yeah.
The Army of Occupation?
Yeah, the Army of Occupation in Germany, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was following the Bermuda experience?
No.
That would have been
Bermuda was my last overseas tour, yeah. No, that was during World War II, pardon me.
Yeah, let's not get that on the record.
No, that was during the occupation, was in the early 50s, and that's when I was in Germany.
Mm-hmm. And what were you doing there then?
I was an administrative officer with ACS Communications. I was a WAF commander at Ramstein Air Base. And I guess that was it, communications, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So those were more administrative type things.
Mm-hmm. Did you live on base, or were you in the economy then?
I lived on the economy for a while. My mother, who was my dependent, was permitted to, as an officer, she was permitted to join me. So she joined me, and it was pretty interesting because here she was, a woman who had been born in Europe and now living in, living in Europe, in Germany, of course, at the time. But my mother was a very patriotic woman. And I credit her a lot with my strong feelings for wanting to do something other than being just a plain worker. I remember when I was a little girl, the church was having a Ukrainian classes. The priests were having Ukrainian classes. And I said to my mom, I'd like to go to take that Ukrainian class. And she would not permit me to go because, she said, she did not come to America for me to learn Ukrainian. She came to America to be an American. Mm-hmm. So she, I think she fostered a lot of that strong feeling I have about being in the service.
Mm-hmm. And she had learned English.
Oh, yes, she was self-taught. She learned to write. Of course, her writing was phonetic. If she was saying, she would write me a letter, she'd say, I am writing a few words, and she'd say, writing, R-I-D-I-N-G, mm-hmm. and few, F-U, mm-hmm. a few words. Mm-hmm. And I remember that when I was in basic training at Fort Des Moines, Iowa, during World War II, that whenever I received a letter from my mother, all the women would gather around me because they wanted to hear her letter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, and that, in essence, is all I have to offer to the oral history program. Just my own personal experience.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it's all about, though, is your and other individuals' individual history.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did being in the military gave you security, as you pointed mm-hmm. out, although there were opportunities that you took advantage of.
Yeah.
Did it change you in any way?
Oh, I think so. I think it made me a more independent and responsible individual. I I exerted myself more because when I was a younger person, I was very withdrawn. Everybody thought I was very, very shy. In fact, when I decided to go into service, the people who knew me all my life were sure I would never, ever make it through. But I fooled them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did being in the military affect your views of military as such or war?
Trying to think that out. I think being in the service affected the way I felt about military women. And my feeling for being a military woman was that as a military woman, I had to represent the best that I could be, okay? That I would never do anything in the service that would degrade women in the service. That I would, when I was WAF commander, I made sure that my young women in my squadron were always dressed properly. In fact, they used to call me Tidy Terry behind my back. Whenever I did an inspection of the barracks, I'd leave little notes all around saying, your room is not tidy, your bed is not tidy. And so when I left the squadron, they had a farewell party for me, and someone had written a poem called Too Tidy Terry.
That's funny.
And the same was true when I was on recruiting duty. I was the WAF selection officer for the Air Force. And we could at that time take in only 200 women. We could only accept 200 women a month. And of course, I would review all the applications, and I was the one who would say whether a young lady would come into the service or not. I had very high standards for the women applying for entry into the Air Force, and the recruiters called me Old Iron Girdle. I would
too
write,
rigid for them.
Yeah, I would. I used a red pencil on the application forms when I saw something that was, to me, should have alerted the recruiter that she may or may not, that she may not be a good applicant. And I was told by the recruiters that whenever they received an application returned to them, they knew it was a non-selection, and they would sort of flip through looking for the red marks. But I enjoyed recruiting duty. It was it also brought me out. It gave me more confidence in myself because with recruiting service, I had to speak to groups of college women. I had to travel around all over. I had to be interviewed. I had to speak to recruiters about the recruiting of young women. And it made a different person of me. The entire experience was a different person of me. I sometimes think if I hadn't gone into the service, I probably would still be living in New York City in an ethnic area. Doing work that would not have brought me the security that I was looking for.
More satisfaction.
Yes.
Besides WOSL, have you joined other military organizations or veterans organizations?
Yeah.
Since you?
I'm a member of the Retired Officer Association, the Military Order of the World Wars, MOWW, the American Legion. Uh, course, Women's Overseas Service League. I'm also a member of Freedomist Foundation at Valley Forge, and I joined that organization simply because I felt that it was an organization that sponsored good things for America. They have a youth program, a youth leadership program, which I have enjoyed working with young people, selecting them to attend a leadership conference. That has been very satisfying. And that's about it.
So you've continued to contribute in many ways throughout.
I suppose, yeah.
Yes. Well, you've had a notable career, Terry, and we really appreciate getting this down on this tape and the various records.
As I say, I didn't do anything dramatic, but I did what I felt was necessary, and evidently the service, the Air Force, felt that I could contribute something in my own way.
And so, you obviously did, and yeah. Thank you very much.